Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you. Look out, it's only films to be buried with. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a thistle, and I love films. As Lao Tzu once said, the flame that burns twice as bright burns half as long. Which isn't technically true for all sequels, though Creed 2 is 3 minutes shorter than Creed. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Kyle MacLachlan, and even Led Campbells. But this week, it's the brilliant, award-winning comedian, it's Laura Smith. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 15 minutes or more with Laura. We talk secrets, we talk the beginning and ending of things. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Laura Smith. Laura Smith is an award winner. She won the Funny Women Award. She's appeared on Live at the Apollo and Jonathan Ross and Frankie Boyle. She's acted in loads of things. She's touring the country this year in her excellent new stand-up show. We had never met before. We recorded this on Zoom about a week ago. And boy, does this one go deep. She was amazing. I really think you're going to love this one. She's a fucking delight. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 288 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a comedian, a Funny Woman Award winner, a New World Orderer, a Jonathan Rosser, a Guardian writer, a Live at the Apollo-er, a hero, a legend, one of the great new comedians in the world working today. She's here. She's live. Can you believe it? I can because I'm looking at her. You're about to hear her, unless you're also watching this video. Please welcome to the show. It's the one, the only, here she is. It's Laura Smith.
Oi, oi, what a build-up. I'll take that all day long. Thank you.
How are you, Laura? Nice to meet you. First time we've met, isn't it?
It is true because you're more in LA than London now, are you?
Sometimes. I've seen you on all the YouTubes.
I've scoured the YouTubes.
I've seen all your bits.
Thanks.
And fucking funny. And I saw all your stuff and I was like, she's fucking funny. And then I checked with Lou Sanders, who, as you know, is the voice of reason in comedy.
She's the oracle.
she's the only sensible voice in comedy. And I said, Laura Smith's fucking funny. Is she nice? He said, yeah, she's amazing. Get her on your show. I said, all right.
And yeah, we were crying pretty quickly on her Cuddle Club podcast. That's how we roll. I think when I first started, I kind of reached out to her. I've got geeky fan pics post gigs with Lou Sanders. That's how deep cuts how much I love her. So yeah, sort of. So yeah, she's my favourite comedian. So
good choice.
And a mutual. We've got a mutual. Yeah. So yeah, very good choice.
How long have you been at it now? 5 years?
Just about. Yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you.
You've already sort of completed comedy because you've done all the TV shows and Live at the Apollo. I mean, I guess that's it, right?
Yeah, that is it. Do you know what? It's funny. I was talking the other day and it's not like, you know, you have ambition and all of that sort of thing. But I was just sort of having a drink with my husband after a gig last night. And I just said, like, if gigging was it, if the circuit was it, that would be me living my dream. And that's a nice baseline to feel on. I have very few ambitions other than that. And everything else feels good. You know, I've got into writing and developing shows and writing for other shows. And that feels nice. And little bits of acting here and there. I like it all, but to me, the circuit is everything and the craft and geeking out with another comedian. I did a new bit the other night and Sean McLaughlin got off to just be forensic with him. And it was just, that's the bit. It just, that's so, I feel like, yeah, maybe tick, tick, tick completed it, mate. But the craft is never complete. So that feels nice.
Yeah. I'm sure I've told this before, and forgive me if you've heard this, but you wouldn't have, but maybe. Anyway, years ago, I was doing a gig. I turned up to a gig, and it was in fucking December, and I turned up, and I was like, oh, no, it's like a sort of corporate Christmas gig, and it was at Spiky Dicks or whatever it's called. What's that place called? Licky Dicks. It was at Licky Dicks. Spiky Dicks.
They both sound Dicks. Tempting.
Yeah. And it was like under a pub. And it was this whole like office party. It was a fucking nightmare.
Dirty Dicks.
Everyone was
in Liverpool.
Dirty Dicks. Dicks. And
Sucky fucky dirty dicks.
It was lucky fucky stinky dirty dicks. And it was like a office Christmas party, and they were hammered and they were heckling everyone. Everyone was having a nightmare. And I went up quite late, but I sort of had figured out watching it. I was like, there's no way anyone could do material here. You've just got to fucking play with this crowd and sort of roast them, and that's all that's going to work. Anyway, I ended up having quite a good gig, despite thinking this is going to be terrible, terrible. But afterwards, this very drunk woman came up to me and she was like, yeah, you were quite funny. And I was like, oh, thanks. And she said, so what's all this for? What's next? And I genuinely was like, oh, just another gig. Just another gig. Another one of it. Just another gig. And I could see she felt sorry for me. Like, I could see that she was sort of like, is this it? And I was sort of like, yeah. And I remember thinking, and I am so grateful that I am not doing you. What you do.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that I'm not going back to the office tomorrow, that I get to do, you know what I mean? I was like, I know you feel sorry for me, but this is it. This is it. This isn't going anywhere. It's just this. More of this.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. And you feel sorry for me.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's so funny, people's responses to what you do. And, you know, there's always that thing like women get, like, I've got children as well. So it's all like that kind of, oh, it's good that you're, like, I always get, oh, well done. Or how'd you do this? And I made a stupid like video for my Instagram and just my mates sort of went, I don't know how you find the time. But I thought, well, this is all I do now. I just sort of dick about. Do you know what I mean? And I think, like, I love it. And people go, "What, you love it?" I love it. I love bad gigs. It's that thing of, isn't it? Like a bad comedy gig, still better than any day of work I've ever done. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I think that's true. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah,
Laura, I hope you don't mind. I read your Guardian article that you wrote. And it made me cry. And I thought it was a very, very beautiful. I thought it was a really fucking great bit of writing, and really, basically, if you don't mind, it was about your cancer diagnosis, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And you are now all clear and
yeah,
whatnot.
Yeah.
And congratulations. And I thought it was just such a good bit of writing. It was so sort of wise and funny and heartbreaking and like, and seriously good advice. There's really good advice in it. And anyway, I was just like, God, she's a fucking good writer. And
thank you.
I wondered, if I may ask, how you are, having been through this terrible, terrible thing. How long ago were you all clear? How long has it been?
Well, really, after my surgery, that I was considered in remission, as they say, and then everything else has been adjuvant therapy to keep me safe. And, it, you know, anyone that's had cancer or anything serious health stuff knows there's a sense of, like, you know, you don't know, and you're sort of that thing of going 5 years, 10 years. So it's a couple of years now I've been all right. And, you know, the article that you're talking about, I talked about it in context of kind of, you know, coming to live my dream late and all that sort of stuff. So it's good. And, you know, the basis of this show about, you know, you asking people about how they feel about death, so we can jump in there.
As I was reading your article, I was like, oh boy.
Well, I thought, well, I know I've got an answer to that. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And am I scared of death? And I don't know, maybe this is a comedian's mentality, but, or just a sort of bit of a fighter mentality. But I realise the anxiety of a diagnosis is so powerful. And every letter that you receive, everything that you get about it, you know, you're very disempowered. Just, you know, it's a disempowering thing. You're in the hands of the doctors. I was thinking of a joke where I go, I don't like doctors, because I had cancer and it was a doctor who told me, which is just a stupid way. But there is some truth in that. Do you know what I mean? Because you're like, you're my gods now, because I'm waiting for what you tell me about this scan and that scan. And I just realised I had to be okay with dying in order to, I still don't want to call it a fight, in order to just be on this, I also don't want to call it a journey, but to be in this kind of process, I thought, okay, if I can, it's a mentality, like almost like you at Dirty Dicks, if I can handle the worst, I've watched them all now, if I can handle the worst, I'm just rolling then, do you know what I mean? And there's sometimes, and so if I went at it with this kind of, don't die, don't die, don't die, I think that anxiety would have consumed me. But as soon as I went, okay, you know, I can be at peace with, I can be cool with dying, that was an integral part of the fight of coming out the other side, where I just didn't want it. It's the end of Labyrinth. You have no power over me. You know, that when everything falls away, or The Matrix, which borrowed heavily, no, I'm just joking. But you know, that kind of, you realise it has no power over you. And I said to my husband, tell me you and the kids will be all right. He goes, we'll be all right. I said, all right, we'll be all right then. And obviously I have the fear in the sense of, like, you know, hugging my children. It'll be saying goodbye, you know, leaving them to fend for themselves. But also, you know, I dug really deep. It all got a bit cosmic. I'm obsessed with near-death experiences. There's a brilliant one that's an account of one by Anita Morjani, who was at death's door, had this huge near-death experience and just went back into her body. And so I always sort of go, it's like when people go, how was life at the Apollo? I go, I chose to enjoy it. I sort of feel like, I'm just choosing to live. I'm just going to live. And how, like, fill up my cup. So, it's funny to ask someone about death and tell them they're dead, and in a kind of premise when you know they've kind of fought for their life.
Really, but I was having,
I was talking about my husband the other day, and I was with my cranio osteopath, because that's the sort of stuff I do now.
Because Lou gave you one,
we talked about that. And I was sort of going, I said, well, obviously he's never had the privilege of fighting for his life. And she went, wow, what a way to frame it. But I thought, oh yeah, that is best how I look at it. You know, there is this sort of thing where everything, all priorities shift and it is nice. You know, the tough stuff does give you the lessons. So I'm not scared of death at all. I'm not scared of death. That's it. Wow. I just don't. I know I'm not.
Well, then.
You're dead. It's okay.
I forgot to tell you, you are dead. So I'm glad. You are dead. So well done. You did it. How did you die?
It was in me bones. It came back. I'd like a comedy death, I suppose. I'd like to, like, die a hero. That's what it was standing, it was catching a stray bullet or defending someone. That's what I'd like to think,
Who was the bullet aiming for?
Some poor kid that didn't deserve it, and I jumped in.
Shit.
Yeah.
You bloody hero.
You're welcome.
Fast, so fast.
That's it.
All right, so you stepped in front of a kid being shot. I mean, this is, at first it was dark, but this was really dark. Tell me this, the person who you just mentioned, the story of the near-death experience, what was it? What was the...
Her name's Anita Morjani, and it's dying to be me. But I just listened. Do you listen to Theo Von's podcast? Theo Von.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, Theo Von has had a recent guest who's with this Dr. Jeffrey Long, I think his name is, who's studied over 4,000 different things of near-death experiences and the overriding themes of all of them. And her book is called Dying to Be Me, and he's got a book all about it, and just the incredible peace that people experience and the recurring themes and things they couldn't possibly have known or been aware of. And so I find them really fascinating. Yeah.
Can you tell me the recurring themes?
The recurring themes are an overwhelming sense of peace, an overwhelming sense that actually this is the real, they talk about the real world, the real existence. Mm-hmm. A sense of a creator, a sense of, or rather a source, a divine source, a sense of 360 degree sort of vision and other hypersenses. So it's all happening at once, all together, an awareness of other spirits that you recognize on a kind of connective level, and no fear. And then Theo, in his own kind of crazy way, he says something like, you know, well, why do we have to do this bit? Why would you want to go back into your body? Why do we have to do the human bit? And another thing, that a recurring theme from it, is that, oh, it's an absolute essential part of the experience, this bit. So that all that we need to learn. And there's a really nice reassuring bit at the end of the conversation where they say, well, actually, because, and I think I talked about this on Lou Sanders, our mutual friend and comedian Lou Sanders podcast, about, because she said, what's the point of life? And I was, it's like, and they say the same thing. It's about to do the work. You know, I think we live in an age where it's like, you know, oh, my anxiety or my this or my, and there's a sort of kind of leading with the thing that's holding you back. I would, but, and all these things that we're, you know, rightfully sort of maybe crippled by emotionally, but actually the work is to kind of connect to your fellow man and get rid of all the things that stop you, the hang-ups, the fear, the hurt, the trauma, which we all have, like, in varying degrees, and things affect us, you know. So it's about overcoming all of that to reach out and love and get as close to that spirit realm that we're all heading to eventually anyway. And I'm interested in that. I'm interested in, it's like the end of, you know, Jacob Marley in Christmas Carol. He's like, you know, you're a good man of business. And he says, business, you know, mankind was my business. You know, this, all these things that, all these ego things that occupy us in loads of different things, all the hang-ups, all our crutches and all that sort of stuff. But actually it's about overcoming all of those so that we can see each other, really be present and connect and commune and love and care for one another and all that good stuff. So yeah, really lovely conclusions and phenomenal things in these near-death experiences, like a young couple that he fell asleep at the wheel, and he had a shared near-death experience, but his fiance didn't make it, but he was very at peace and knew that she'd gone wherever she was. He was at peace with that. And and a woman that had never had sight in her whole life actually could come back and describe things that she saw on this other side. And so it is a really phenomenal study. And it's a doctor. He's a medical doctor that decided to go into this study. So really fascinating stuff. So, I think, you know, it's hard to, you know, once you've gone through stuff, it's hard to kind of go back and go, God, that's where I was at. But I was so anxious, obviously, at the start of of my diagnosis. So I was really consuming a lot of good stuff and mad stories. Like, you know, I quoted it in the article that you referred to, but this book called Cancer as a Turning Point, where he worked with this guy, LaShawn, a psychologist, worked with people for such a long time. And he was saying what he describes as the Vienna model, when he was talking to people that were dying and, you know, tell me about your father, tell me about your mother or all this. He said, nobody got better. When you start going, oh, what do you wish you did with your life? What would you have done if this, and what could you? And that these people just went, well, I never travelled. Or, you know, this is in the 40s, 50s and 60s and 70s, where it was really restrictive and people had restrictive lives. And then, you know, you'd have stage 4 cancer patients going off and still sending postcards 25, 30 years later, you know, and that actually getting rid of all the weight that stops you doing things and going for it, the emotional weight, you know?
Fascinating.
Yes. This is a different podcast.
No, this is exactly this is brilliant. I appreciate it. That's so interesting. And so now, do you feel, because I sometimes think at smaller levels when people have, when, you know, when I've had it where you, I don't know, meditate and you have this like, oh, you have some vision or you have some breakthrough. It feels like a breakthrough. But then it's difficult to sustain that when you go back to normal life and gigging and raising your kids and all of that. Like this kind of spiritual awareness you feel and stuff, like how much do you feel day to day you keep that and how much do you get caught up in that fucking parking ticket or whatever,
you know what I mean? Like, of course, you know, it's just being kind to yourself in all of that. It's daily forgiveness of yourself and others and trying to stay present. My big thing that I really had to learn on so much of my energy field, everything was, oh, you know, speculative. What's going to happen? When I was a teacher, whatever I've done, it's always if, and you're going towards the future. But quite a good practice of bringing it back to the present and to the point of like, I don't know what I'm doing till this day. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah, great.
Because you can race ahead. So I can tell when that sort of gritted teeth, sort of determination, frontal lobe, cranky energy is kicking in. And you know, you remind yourself to surrender. You remind yourself to kind of surrender and accept and even accept if you're wound up. Yeah, of course I'm wound up. I haven't slept for a few nights or, you know, of course there's a lot going on in the world. Of course, you know, accept a sort of things. And like I say, when I know that I'm quite ratty or I'm paranoid or I'm insecure, I think, I sort of treat them like red lights, warning lights on a car. I think, okay, you've been, you know, eating badly or you've probably had a glass of wine three times this week or, you know, you haven't slept well. Like take a step back. So it's, and this same woman, she talks about that as well, this in this Dying to Be Me book, she says when, you know, when her business is or things that you think need more effort, it's the counterintuitive thing to say, things are quite crunky. I'm not flowing with the universe. Step back and rest. I mean, it's the same in stand-up, isn't it? You know, I only ever say I killed it in stand-up when, you know, I've discerned something magic in the room and I'm surfing that and, you know, orchestrating that. You know, I can tell my jokes. I can write a joke and I can go, oh, yeah, that was good. But there's those rare magic nights where you go, what Neil Young describes as being at one with your outward breath. That's always a nice state to be in, isn't it?
Yeah. How is it affected you as a parent? I am assuming you're a very wonderful parent. Do you feel?
Oh no, yeah.
Do you feel more? And perhaps you always were. Do you feel like this has made you a better parent? Has it made you a worse parent? Like, how does it affect you with your kid?
I think so. Well, it's been a bit of a journey, really. I am. Yeah, you know, we're all still pieces of shit. You know, I'm still a piece of shit. Like, let's not get it twisted. Do you know what I mean? But I am. In the year, what was nice about getting cancer was like it gave me a license to be really selfish. And I always missed that, you know. So it's like I always wanted, like I was wanting my leg in a brace or glasses when I was in school. Do you know what I mean? So it's a little bit like I'm the not well one. There's something really nice about it. Do you know what I mean? And you're not allowed to say it. It's like license to take care of myself. So I had quite a year of being quite selfish, and I was doing a lot of stuff. Then I've actually, you know, when you're in survival mode, and then you come out of survival, and I thought my kids weren't in a good place. You know, So the beginning of last year, they just weren't happy. They weren't happy at school. My little boy was very emotional and it was all coming out in different ways. So actually it was a little bit like, okay, they need me. So it was like message received loud and clear. And I think, you know, I do think we live in a world where everyone's so busy and it's like, oh, you know, I've got all this stress at work and now the kids are kicking off. And you're like, no, the kids are kicking off. Do you know what I mean? Because of everything going, like this weird detachment that people have. So I think I'm a good parent in that I thought, oh, okay, I'm hearing you. And you know, it felt very much like let's restore some balance in the force and everything. And so that was nice. So, yeah, I think I'm a good parent in the sense of I've unlearned a lot of things. I've been a parent a long time. I had my oldest when I was young and, you know, she certainly got the brunt of a lot of my own kind of stress and not knowing how my unhealed stuff was coming out in different ways and everything and having a lot to prove. And I think because I'm taking care of myself a little bit, I've got more capacity. I don't get triggered of like, I haven't got the capacity for this. I'm conscious of making sure we've got, you know, the language in our house, to quote my middle child, Cole, your cup gets full quick. Like, so that's a sort of like, because when I'm like, can we get out of this bloody house? So, you know, yeah, they know who I am. So yeah, definitely balance and taking care of them. Yeah, so of course it has. Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. I mean, I guess we should probably also talk about films.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, go on.
If we have to. Hang on. So do you think there's a heaven?
Yeah, but not in a Philadelphia advert kind of way. In a kind of, I think that from anything I feel and understand about it, like you talked about meditation, and I've had lots of like hypnotherapy or doing mushrooms or things like that, you know, when you're just like elevating higher. I think there's, you know, light and vibrations and cosmic sort of connections are all there. I just think that we live in the world with limited perception from all of our senses, so that we all know, don't we? We all know that feeling of cosmic connection when it happens, yeah, or a coincidence, we might call it, or just manifestation or stuff like that. So I just think the heaven is almost like the real existence. Do you know what I mean? Like the real, yeah, where we're no longer limited by all our sort of bullshit. Or some, yeah, people call them bodies. But, you know, but like, you know, I just think, I really do. I believe in God. I believe in heaven. Yeah.
Let me tell you something, babe. You're absolutely right. There is heaven. You're welcome in it. You can get rid of this bullshit, as we call them, bodies. And you're welcome. Come inside. Everyone's a big fan. I want to talk to you about your life. Oh, it's filled with your favourite thing. What's your favourite thing?
Chicken wings.
Right. Heaven is made up of chicken wings. The sofas are made of chicken wings. The walls are made of chicken wings. You can just grab, anything you grab is a chicken wing.
Oh, God. I don't know
if you like this anymore, but it's chicken wings. As far as the eye can see, it's chicken wings. And the chicken wings want to talk to you about your life. They want to talk about it through film. And the first, yay, thing they ask you, Laura Smith, is what's the first film you remember seeing?
Oh, I can't. I feel like it's really... I think it might be something awful like Nightmare on Elm Street or something, but like from behind the sofa, an awareness of my, okay, brother and his friend watching it and being really terrified. I think it might be something like, Jesus, that. I know.
How old do you think you were?
Well, I think you could date it probably 5 or 6, but you know, like I don't think I saw it, but it was on and it was, yeah, all really scary. I feel like that was a big thing. Yeah.
That's really scary.
Yeah, that's really scary.
That's a really scary start, yeah, to films. I was very scared of that when I was a little child.
Yeah.
That was a very scary.
I think it was, and yeah.
Do you like being scared? What's the scariest film you've ever seen?
I mean, that's probably still up there. I think that affected me. That was in my head, this idea of dreams and things that could threaten you. What's the scariest film? I mean, I'm not good with scary. I think Wicker Man's the scariest film. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah? Yeah, of course.
I know that it's because it's so... I think that's much clever scare, isn't it? That sort of creepy, what's going on kind
paranoid,
of...
like...
paranoia, and also the kind of Midsummer sort of paganism, yeah, and floatiness and loveliness and... I think what a weird comment on the world that we live in. Do you know what I mean? Of like, yeah, yeah, everything's fine, but oh, we just sacrifice virgins. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you know, in that sort of, I think some films pull their punches, don't they? It's like Shutter Island. I find that very scary. But then it was, do you see what I mean? Then it, yeah, was he paranoid? A very funny thing to have paranoia is totally confirmed. That's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, all those paranoid films, they're always right. I don't think I've seen a film where it's about someone thinking something's going on and it turns out it wasn't, except for maybe The Father, but that's about dementia.
Oh, God, what a beautiful film, though. How incredible is The Father? But what's the one with John Goodman, the Cloverfield Lane?
Cloverfield Paradox? Cloverfield Lane, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, that's great.
Sort of double paranoid, because is this guy a psycho? So in a weird way, yes. Her paranoia was wrong. He wasn't weird, but paranoia was correct. It was outside. So that's a weird one, isn't it, actually? That's good. That's a great film, actually.
That's a good film. 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's what that
is. Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane, yeah.
So, Wicker Man. Do you like being scared? Do you hate
No, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at that. Yeah, I'm not one that wants to watch Saw or anything like that. I feel like I like being scared. I like being on edge. I've just started rewatching the Fargos after watching Fargo season 5. And right, you're like that the whole time. I found like Fargo season 5 really creepy. So that is great. But when I don't like horror. I don't like showing the nastiest possible thing. I think that's cheap to do that. Like,
yeah,
to just be in your own head and imagination is brilliant. You know, that's why I think I like older horror films like that. Yeah.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school.
I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
What about crying? What's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a big crier?
Yeah, I'm a big crier. I love crying. I love crying. As a kid, and this might be actually one of an early films that I watched as a kid, I feel like Nightmare on Elm Street is quite a dark start because there was loads, like Labyrinth was always on, it felt like. And Lady Killers, that seemed to be film that we had a lot. We watched that a lot. That was one of the few VHSs we had. But Champ, oh my God, I remember crying. You know the boxing film Champ with John Voight?
Yeah, oh my God.
The Champ. Oh my God. Wake up, Champ. Wake up. I'm going to play that at my funeral just to make sure people cry. Just that desperation of like, wake up, Champ. Oh my God. And then I remember My Girl. That's I cried so funny. Hard at My Girl. And then cried then. And this only happened a few times. Like, I cried and went into my mom. I was like, I wish I was in that film. I wanted to be like the Anna. Is it? Klumsky. I was so emotionally moved by it. And then the fact that it was a little girl that I kind of was the same age as, I think I was just crying out of jealousy by the end, like a weird narcissist.
You wanted your friend to have died of these things. My friend from Home Alone.
Yeah, it felt so tragic. Yeah, I love a cry.
I like someone with such low self-esteem that they don't think anyone will cry at their funeral, so they play the champ.
The champ, yeah, I know. Oh, I just can't, anything like that, you can't believe. I mean, I cried at Lion King. I remember crying at Lion King. That was a big deal.
What about a film that you love that is not critically acclaimed? Most people don't like it, but you love it unconditionally.
Like Rocky Four.
Rocky Four is a great, is a perfect
answer. Perfect, isn't it? Because I realise I like a lot of sequels as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, yeah make it bigger, madder, better. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I actually sitting through Rocky, you're like, oh, can we get to the mad montages, please? It's taking too
Rocky
long.
Rocky One's depressing.
It's so Rocky depressing.
Four, Rocky Four, he sorts the Cold War out.
That's what I mean. It's They've great. Got the formula down. And I love all the Creed films, love both Creed films. I mean, love Creed's Michael B. Really Jordan. Good. They're really good. I know, and just, all day long I could watch those sorts of things. I love, I've always loved sequels. I think I love Ghostbusters 2 more than Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think I do too. Mm. There, we said it. It's not a crime.
Yeah, it's not a crime. I love it. Back to the Future 2 more than Back to the Future. I think I like them all. Yeah. Give it more.
Grease 2 better than Grease.
Oh, I know. Listen, that was another one of the few VHSs. I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer can do no wrong, can she, though?
She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah. I love Grease so much, though. I can't. I love Grease 2 in the sense that people pan it in that context. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's like, come on, it's Grease. Grease is perfect.
Listen, Laura, Grease 2 is better. We both know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ghostbusters 2 is fucking great.
It's so good.
It's also more coherent, I think, than Ghostbusters 1. Ghostbusters 1's all over the place.
It's all over the place. I tell you what, the new one, The Afterlife, oh my God, what a film. Oh, tick, tick, tick. Love it.
What about a film that you used to love?
you loved it very much, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, I don't like this no more, because you might have changed.
Well, there's a lot of films in that category for me because you go, oh my God, my kids need to watch this. So like Ghostbusters one, you're like, nah. And there's like, you know, people get ghost giving heads. And you know, you go, the 80s, there was a lot of cocaine in a lot of development rooms in the 80s because you're just like, what was actually happening? Yeah. Even the Goonies, you're like, oh, this quite weird crap. And the pace of films, I can't believe how slow films are. My kids are like, can you cut to something quickly? Can there be 100 minions in it, please? Like, so there's that. But Breakfast Club is one. The Breakfast Club.
Okay, tell me, because I've got thoughts on this, luckily.
There was just this sort of like, we loved it. It's so iconic, mm-hmm. you know, the walking off at the end, the edginess and all of that. But actually, the edgy people in it aren't edgy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He gets stoned and starts doing backflips. You know, the whole taping his ass cheeks to get, like the cry, it's so American violin playing kind of, it just doesn't work. It's like, the teacher's the best thing in it, I think. I mean, and I love Molly Ringwald. Yeah, love Ali Sheedy, love them all, but it just doesn't work for me anymore. Sorry. And that's something I love.
Yeah, that was my answer to this question, was The Breakfast Club, because I watched it a few years ago and I was like, oh my God, I hate them. I hate all of them.
Yeah.
I hate these whiny little fucking, oh, my dad wanted me to get good grades. I was like, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I have reevaluated again.
Okay.
I was on a plane the other day and for some reason I was like, maybe I should give this another chance. And I watched it again. And I was like, do you know what? Yes, it's got many, many issues, but I get it again. As in, I sort of go, because what I think I hadn't noticed the second time is there's a really good scene with the teacher and the janitor where the teacher's going, these fucking kids, da, 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 da. And the janitor goes, what are you talking about? It's always this. You were this. They were this. Yeah. They'll be you. Like, there's an awareness of course you find this annoying, but you were this. Yeah. And they'll be this. And I was like, oh, all right. Okay, I like this more than I thought I did.
Yeah. But I just think how iconically, like, I love, like, Pretty in Pink. That's never, you know, for a nut, because it was just Molly Ringwald was everywhere, wasn't she? So, like, that still stands for me, and, like, Ducky, and, oh, I just love all that, yeah.
What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had watching it will always make it iconic to you.
Okay, I'm going to try and give this answer without crying. I might have to close my eyes. So my dad died when I was quite young. I was 10. And, you know, my mum, now I have kids and I've realised I'm exactly the same age as my mum was when she was widowed. And I just thought they're all, you know, that's kind of crazy. And I don't know how my mum kept us together, because she just made it look easy. No help from no one, 4 kids. Wow. And her birthday was in the January, a few months after he died. And she took us all to watch Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Mm.
And then we had a McDonald's afterwards. And I think even as a 10-year-old, I knew this wasn't my 42-year-old mother, because I'm just a selfish sort of brat, but at this age, of my 42-year-old mother's sort of dream birthday. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But she gathered us together and took us, and it felt like a real treat. And there was a real sort of, you know, when you are enjoying that sense of togetherness, I sort of look back at that time and think of all of us as on a sort of raft. Do you know what I mean? Like, together. And I just loved that film. And I just feel like, I think I knew at the time how kind that was of my mum, and how, and probably what a stretch it was, you know, even financially, I don't want to patronise her, to sort of do that and do a thing that was a treat for us. You know, when, you know, you remember kindnesses in tough times sort of thing. Of course she was going to be kind, so she's our mum, but that was a big one. I feel like I just love that film because of that. I always associate it with that.
Did she love the film? Do you remember her? Or was it like for you? Do you think she enjoyed the film?
I think we all loved Home Alone. We were sort of, you know, I feel like when I was a kid, anything we loved, it had to be loved by Jory. Like, even this, getting ready for this podcast, was like, there's been chats, there's been big chats, there's been, like, you can't forget that, you know, like, you know, there's been big memory lane chats. And I was the other answer possibly for this was, like, one time me and my sister bunked school because dad was home, and, you know, where he, you know, he just, rather than, he knew we weren't really ill, so he took us to watch Ghostbusters 2 again. Do you know, so that was a big thing that I still loved. Do you know what I mean? Like, that naughtiness. But I think she loved the film, and I think we all loved it. We all enjoyed it, but it was just a kind of, I think we were all anticipating it with excitement. And even though we, you know, I just think of it as a nice experience that stands out as a cinema experience more than anything else.
May I ask, is your mum still alive?
Yes, she is. She's in her 70s, my mum, and she thinks she's gonna live forever. She cycles everywhere and she keeps herself busy. And she's always, yeah, she just thinks she doesn't want to die at all. She doesn't like old people. She's like, oh God, they take, you know, pills for their knees. Like, she's just like, no thanks. So I think she sort of lives like one of these older Japanese people in the blue zones. You know, like, she just stays busy. She's always crafting. She's always like switched on and keeps herself busy and all around the kids and everything. And just so she's cool. She's fine. She's doing good, Brett.
Will you send her this podcast? I would like her to hear that story.
She'll go, no, don't say nothing about me. Don't mug me up.
You bugging me off for that podcast? Yeah. I was being nice. Shut up.
Yeah, don't mention
me. You leave
me
out of it.
Yeah, proper like one of those ones. Like, you know, when it's like, what did you do this summer holidays? And mum will be like, who wants to know? Well,
fucking totally get that. I feel that way about all like small talk. Like, how was your weekend? It's none of your fucking business, though. What are you after?
Yeah, yeah. I'm here now, aren't I? Let's talk about over there.
We're being present. Yeah. What is the film you most relate to?
Oh, God. Oh, this is really hard. This is the hardest question. Do people find this difficult?
A lot of people find this one difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
It's rare that people go, I know this one, but sometimes they do.
Yeah, I find this really difficult. I'd say there's shows that I go, okay, I can relate to that bit or that bit. Do you know what, though? I mean, as ridiculous as it is, Kill Bill Volume 2.
I love Kill Bill Volume 2.
Kill Bill Volume 2, where we kind of get the kind of, okay, now we're cooking with gas thing. And then she gives this speech, and I have such a love-hate relationship with Quentin Tarantino and films and what he thinks he can get away with. But when she talks about, because like I said, I had my child when I was young, when her priorities shifted, when she got a positive pregnancy test, all of a sudden, you know, I kind of attribute my whole life to my eldest child. Do you know that kind of? Ooh. And there's a bit where, you know, I love it when she curls up with her and there's this nice bit where it says, you know, the lioness was reunited with her cub and all was well in the jungle. I always feel like that when I've been away from the kids. And also, I fucking never let shit go. So if anyone's going to go on a killing rampage for something, like, it'll be me. I can still talk about minor things. So
you're on a roaring rampage of revenge. What? Yeah. How can I ask how old your eldest is now?
She's 21. And
Wow. Yeah. And are you still super, super, super tight love for her?
Oh yeah, we are. She's phenomenal, and she really blows me away. She's you know, we just were having a laugh talking about this categories and all that, and it was funny hearing her answers because her answers were like mad. I was like, oh no, yeah, I remember that film, or you know, things that I've passed on to her and stuff that she loves. I was like, that's wild. So it's quite nice hearing it from her perspective, and yeah, she's really lovely. I'm proud of her. I just think, you know, She's really lovely kid. Woman, she's a woman.
She's a bloody woman, please. Thank
you. She's a woman, yep.
Laura Smith, what's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Oh, God. I mean, there's so many things, right? Okay, I'm going to say a few because Weird Science.
Yes, please.
Oh, I mean, I...
Yeah, that's the answer, and it hasn't come up in so long.
That's the answer, some people obviously said it. Come on, that was so sexy.
Yeah.
Just everything about it's sexy. Robert Downey Jr. is sexy in it.
Yeah.
Kelly
LeBrock.
Kelly LeBrock.
Kelly LeBrock, never forget.
Kelly LeBrock. Yeah, not Kelly LeBrock. Yeah, I mean, that's... I think maybe I had a couple of years as just a teenage boy. You know? My daughter goes, cool, if I had a tail, I'd have... Yeah. I'd have wagged it. And just their kind of, you know... I think, yeah, all of it. You don't need explaining, does it? It's just sexy. It's sexy, sexy, mad, sexy, brilliant.
Yeah. It's a very sexy, very, very sexy film. I mean, they make the perfect woman. They make the perfect woman out of a computer. And she's Kelly LeBrock. And you go, yeah, can't argue with that.
You can't argue with that. The fashion's in it, the kind of lace gloves, the kind of, I mean, the baddies. I just fancy both the baddies in it and the good boys. I just, all of it.
The good boys. The bad boys and the good boys.
Your grandpas and good boys love it all. Yeah. all of it, just didn't know where to direct your sexual desire.
Yeah, yeah. It was just fucking all over that film.
even the rocket at the end. Like,
even when
yes,
Bill Paxton turns into a poo, oh, you were like, yeah.
Yeah. Chet.
It's a weird film. He does get turned into a giant poo at the end. You forget.
Yeah.
Also, there's a weird bit in a jazz bar, blues bar. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When he gets stoned and he's sort of jive talking, yeah.
Which he also does in The Breakfast Club, I realise.
Yeah, so it's that's obviously his, a thing.
That's his thing, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a subcategory, troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should.
Well, it's sort of the dirty version of Weird Science, because it is, let's face it, you're never, the coming-of-age sexy stuff is kind of like where it's at, isn't it? Because you're just like, oh my God, yeah, we all knew that sort of feeling and you can project all your fantasies onto it. And then I remember like Rita Sue and Bob 2, which I know is a really sexy film, but it's so problematic and so wrong, but that kind of dirty sex, you're just like, yeah, give me that disgusting, it's my turn next sort of rotten sex. And with that, Shane Meadows does it really well as well. These sort of, that are kind of dark and offbeat, like A Room for Romeo Brass, when Paddy Considine character is just like boner in a Y front, and all, it's all just like gross. But you know, when you sort of, you can, it so recalls all those sort of weird house parties and weirder people, yeah, and, you know, blurred lines and kind of shouldn't, just rotten sort of sexiness, I suppose, I'm into. There you go. No shame.
I think rotten sexiness is a great answer to your troubling
boner. Oh, but yeah, there's obviously other like weird things where you're like, you know, Thundercats. I know that was a show, but, you know, you shouldn't fancy cats, should you? Thundercats were sexy.
Oh, no, Thundercats is really hot.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, thank you. Panthro.
You're absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
Oh, God, this is so difficult. No one can answer this properly, can they? Surely. I don't know. My Cousin Vinny. That's it. It's My Cousin Vinny. That is it. I've got to say it.
Academy Award winner, My Cousin Vinny. That is the great.
Perfect.
I mean, I can't argue with it. It's a perfectly structured, perfectly written, perfectly acted film. And it's funny.
It's perfect. I mean, Jaws, I think Jurassic Park could be it as well.
Yeah,
Jurassic Park might be it. I love Steven Spielberg, I've realised, but I'm going to have to go with My Cousin Vinny. Oh, I don't know. This is so hard.
It's a really good film.
It's perfect. It's what it is.
It's the greatest film of all time, maybe.
But I'll tell you what else is a perfect film. And how I tried to think about this was, now this might be my real answer, because how I tried to think about it is, you know, like the perfect book, you go, okay, that's a perfect thing because it's perfect prose, perfectly structured, or a perfect song, or a perfect thing. I thought, what is the perfect use of film? And all that it can come with, like the soundtracks and camera work and structure and story and plotting and casting, Friday is perfect.
You're right. You are
right. Everyone's got a theme tune. You know, it's a triumph over adversity. You know, they get the girl. There's guns. There's parents, you know, passing on wisdom. Like my mum said, if this film was set in a kind of, you know, quaint Portuguese fishing village, it would be probably held as the greatest film of all time. But it's, you know, in LA, South Central LA. And it's just a beautiful story. It's funny. It's silly. It's, you can watch it again and again. It's quotable. It's a perfectly lovely, beautifully structured thing, isn't it?
God. You're right. You're right on both counts. You have to pick on Friday or My Cousin Vinny.
Friday.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Great answer. Perfect answer. You get it.
Okay.
What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Okay. What have I probably... it's changed over the years. As a youngster, it was Commitments, and I probably watched The Commitments.
Wow.
I think I love soul music because of it. I think I love I think I love Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin because of this film. And I think that's from my formative years. I think I've watched I think I could act out The Commitments for you right now, start to finish. Like, do you know what I mean? I've watched it that much. But in recent years,
go.
I'd say it's when... In recent years, it might be When Harry Met Sally. We watch it a lot. Me and my husband watch it a lot. It's perfect.
That's a perfect film.
It's a perfect film.
I haven't seen The Commitments in a long time. My thing with The Commitments is I thought it was brilliant, the music's brilliant, etc. I think I find it really depressing. It's a really depressing... Because how it sort of all falls apart, and I think it's really sad and like...
Yeah.
But I maybe need to see it again. But my reason I haven't gone back to it is I think I find it really depressing in the end. Am I wrong?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's just the Irish for you. They love it, don't they? They love it. You know, maybe I liked it because of that. I think I'm a little bit of a tragic weirdo like that because, you know, give me Grease flying off into the sky. Give me 8 Mile. Mm. You know, give me Rocky. You want the win at the end, but there's just something.
It's no Rocky IV.
No, it ain't. You're right. What am I talking about?
But yes. All right, I'll have to watch that again. Oh, God, I'm busy.
Yeah.
All right. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Oh, gosh.
Let's not be too negative, please.
It's hard to be negative. Do you know, I mean, it's the hyped films. I'm going to Inception. Like, every time you say Inception weren't that good, every man will go, oh, you didn't get it. But it's one concept. Like, it's one concept played out over the whole film. And I don't know whether that's just me. Someone, I'm just like, okay, yeah. Like, it's almost like, oh, I get it. You know when someone tells you something, you go, yeah, I get it. And then they keep talking. That's what that film was. Yeah, I get it. Inception.
That is so funny. Yeah. I mean, that is a very good description. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I've got it. Go on, crack on, do your little thing.
Fold your cities up, come on.
I'll tell you what I watched the other night though as well. And this is something that I probably used, like Casino. That's a bad film. That is an awful film.
Is it? Oh.
It does not stand the test. Oh, it does not stand the test of time and it makes no sense. Watch it. I think Scorsese wrote it after he shot it.
Really?
Listen, watch it again, Brett. I'm telling you, watch it again. You'll go, what is actually happening here? It is fur coat, no knickers. It is honestly, it is, it's bad. Wow. It's genuinely bad.
Wow. Laura coming in hot.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That might be in my, you know what I had as Breakfast Club. I loved that film. Like, I love Scorsese, but...
You're taking out Nolan and Scorsese. Jesus.
I know, yeah. Come in it. What? I've got friends, yeah?
Come at me. Wow. All right, then. You're in comedy. You're an award winner. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most, Laura Smith?
Oh, God. This is really hard. This is so difficult. This is so difficult. I mean, Dumb and Dumber might be up there, you know.
It's fucking funny.
It's funny. I laughed at that film, man. That is up there. But you know, also, I just Napoleon Dynamite will make me laugh every bit of it. Oh, there's just too many films. There's two. I mean, Airplane is just, they're just, you know, I knew these are all obvious ones, I know, but they're so funny. The Castle, I love Australian films.
I love The Castle.
Oh, tell him he's dreaming. It's stuff I quote a lot, you know, that kind of go.
Yeah.
My husband will still go, what do you call this? Ice cream. it's just, I love it. I just love it. Yeah, so The Castle might be up there as well.
That's great.
The Hunt for the Wilder People, that's a joy as well.
Beautiful,
yeah. Antipode and stuff, love it.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. Symbiotica.com.
Laura Smith, you have been an absolute joy. You've been brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
You've been wonderful. You've been deep. You've been funny. You've been amazing. However, when you was walking down the street and someone was shooting at a kid and you were like, hang on, you were like, not on my street, and you jumped in front of the bullet.
Yeah.
And because you're very fast. And yeah. The bullet hit you straight through the chest. Bang, went through you, but dead. You died. But you didn't, you died quite slowly. And the kid came and the kid said, thank you. And the person shooting the kid went, oh, I'll never do this again. I've learned my lesson. And you said, that's right, you have. And then you said to the kid, earn this. And then you and then you closed your eyes. And I was walking past with a coffee, and you know what I'm like. And I was like, is that Laura? And the kid said, yeah, Laura just took a bullet from me. And I went, fuck, you know, that was nice of her. And I went, yeah. She went, and the kid went, I don't even know her, but she has told me to earn this. So I've probably got to live a good life now. And the guy with the gun went, yeah, I actually feel bad about all of this, so I'm probably going to live a good life too. And I went, good, well, I'm glad you've both learned your lesson. And I said, could you help me with the body? And they say, yeah, what do you need? I said, a couple of axes. They grab a couple of axes. We chop you up. We get you in the coffin. We stuff you in. There's more than I was expecting. The coffin is absolutely rammed. There's only enough room in this coffin for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And in Chicken Wing Heaven, there's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the chicken wings in Chicken Wing Heaven when it's your movie night, Laura Smith? Please.
Oh. Do you know what it is, right? Okay. Because, like I said, I'm so close with all my family. Everything's like by jury and we all, mm-hmm. there's general consensus and everything. I feel like Harry Met Sally I share with my husband, Strictly Ballroom I share with all my sisters. Friday I definitely just share with my brother, copied him. You know, all of that stuff, right? I feel like my cousin Vinny is the film that's like, this is my town. You know what I mean? I've got a whole kilo of chicken wings and it's me. It's me and Marissa Tomei in all her brilliant outfits, and it's...
Love it.
A perfect, perfect courtroom drama. Pisses all over it, A Few Good Men. I mean, it's just perfect. It's the perfect thing. So, yeah, it's my cousin Vinny.
Laura Smith, thank you. Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to watch for in the coming months with Laura Smith?
Well, yeah, I am touring, baby. I'm touring in the UK and Ireland. So there'll be a September, October leg as well. A lot of the other stuff sold out. Hackney Empire in June. So that's really exciting. And it's called Living My Best Life, which is slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also really true. So, yeah, it's nice. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Laura, I've loved this so much. Thank you for doing it.
I have.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
I think you everyone's going to leave this a better person. And
shut up. Thank you. Especially the kid I saved from a shooting.
It's really amazing what you did, Laura.
Oh, no.
That's you all over, that is. That's a bit of you, that. Jumping in front of a bullet for a kid you don't know. That's a bit of you.
Yeah, of course, yes. And thank you. And just, it's so exciting. All my family have been so excited that I'm doing this because they're such huge fans and you're such a star. And it's so exciting watching you do all the big, exciting, shiny things that you deserve. So
get off.
Shut up. That's the secret I wanted to tell.
Say hello to your family for me and I will stop the recording and have a wonderful death. Good day to you, Laura. So that was episode 288. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets, beginnings and endings and video with Laura. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. If you want, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want. Live your life. Thank you so much to Laura for giving me her time. Thank you all for listening. I very much hope you're well. Go see Laura on tour.
Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for an absolute banger of a guest. But I hope you're all well. That is it for now. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.